My name's Richard Sparks. I'm the author of New Rock, New Roll, R-O-L-E, a fantasy adventure story published by the science fiction and fantasy house Kazik, SFNF. And the second book in the series comes out in November, New Rock, New Realm. They're being just the best fun to write, and I hope you enjoy them.
This is a continuing episode of a series with author of New Rock, New Roll, Richard Sparks. And you were friends with Douglas Adams.
Douglas and I were exact contemporaries. He was at Cambridge University and I was at Oxford. So we met in the summer at Edinburgh festivals doing our respective comedy shows. His group had, well, it had Griff Rhys-Jones, who later went on to Not the 9 O'Clock News, and our group had Mel Smith, who's my great friend, and the two of them later had a very successful TV career after Not the 9 O'Clock News, a show called Alas, Smith and Jones. And they're both extremely funny. Mel has sadly died too young in his early 60s. Simon Jones was also in Douglas's group, and he was the lead in Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, the original radio show, which I first heard about when I was on a date with a young lady. I was first date. We'd arranged to meet, so I went to her place, picked her up, went to the local pub in London, and there was Jeff McGiven, who was one of Douglas's contemporaries. So when I was getting the drinks at the bar, I said, "Oh, hey, Jeff, how are you?" And he said, "Oh, great, Douglas has written a show, and a radio show, and I'm in it." I said, "Oh, wonderful, what's it called?" And he said, "A Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy." I said, "Oh, great title," and scuttled back to get to my date because I didn't want to bring a handsome young actor along with me to move in. And that was when I first heard of it. And I actually, my other writing partner, Gail Renard, who was head of the British Writers Guild, twice, she said, "Oh, I can beat that." I said, "What?" She said, "Well, I was Douglas's sketch partner. We used to do sketch comedy together." And Gail is a Canadian girl from Montreal, lives in England. Uh-huh. She said, Douglas came over to the house, we were doing a show together, and he'd been away for some time. And he came and he sat down and said, "I've just been hitchhiking around Greece. I wonder what it'd be like to hitchhike around the galaxy." And Gail said, "Oh, come on, Douglas, you've got a sketch to write." she was far more on the ball than Douglas. I had a drink in London recently with John Lloyd, who's our generation's leading comedy producer, Not the 9 O'Clock News, Blackadder, he produced QI, Spitting Image, and was a very, very good writer himself. And he was actually Douglas's writing partner on two of the episodes of Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy before Douglas turned it into a book. And he said, he had a great line about Douglas. He said, "Douglas was hopeless at everything except having brilliant ideas," which I think I'd be happy if someone said that about me. But he was delightful, Douglas.
So Douglas is already into MMORPGs. Morps?
I don't know. He moved here to Santa Barbara with his wife. Jane was at Oxford with me. She was my exact contemporary, did English. Oh. Did she? No, I think she did. Anyway, she was a friend, a great friend of other friends and a sort of gang of people. And she married Douglas and they went to live in Santa Barbara. And she said, I said, "What's he like up here?" And she said, "Oh, anyway, it doesn't matter." So I remember, you know, we used to sit around and meet while he was over here doing the movie of Hitchhiker because, you know, well, friends. I remember teasing him once. This is actually quite interesting knowledge from a great mind. He was sitting in our house, actually my parents-in-law's backyard, and I said, "Douglas, if I'd written something as brilliant as Hitchhiker, you wouldn't see me for dust. I'd just keep churning them out." And this was like two decades before I even thought of writing fantasy fiction. Mm. And I was slightly teasing Douglas because we'd written some things together, and I knew that he really kind of didn't like it. He was brilliant at writing, but he'd rather do anything else. He's one of those writers. And he sort of looked stiffened and looked at me rather guiltily. He said, "Well, it's not as easy as that." And I thought, yeah, well, right. But now I'm on my fifth book.
Yeah.
My first book took 2 months, the first draft. I mean, a lot of rewriting, brilliant editor, much help to get it from its original state into the state it was published in. The second book took 7 months, the third took a year, the fourth took a year and a quarter, the fifth book, I've been on it for a year and I'm not even halfway through it. So I'm beginning to understand what Douglas meant. It's not as easy as that, because you're kind of doing the same but different. You're in a familiar groove. You don't want to suddenly throw the audience for a loop and write something that doesn't grow out of the previous books and the previous world you've created, but you don't want to keep repeating the same things that you've done. You can't keep shooting the same bullet.
Yeah.
So it's funny that I'd thought it would have become easier. It's just the opposite. Not that it's harder. It's just it just takes longer.
Yeah. No, but by the way, congratulations on getting the first book. You said first draft or outline done in 3 months. That's pretty fast.
No, 2 months. It just flew out. I started on June the 1st and finished on July the 31st. And my wife is an artist.
You were spoiled.
It's like 40 years as a writer built up to that point where it all came out. And my wife, who's an artist, once said a very funny thing to some people. She said, I only married Richard because I knew he'd leave me alone. Because she wants to get on with her own work. She's very good and very successful.
Yeah.
And she said, actually, in that 2 months, that was the first time in our marriage I felt lonely. Because I was just at the computer or had a notebook in my pocket. I mean, in that 2 months, by the way, one weekend we were in Las Vegas and I had the notebook came out and I was sitting at the bar scribbling away while playing video poker one evening. And worked it the next morning and that was like 1,500 words done.
Dang.
The night before.
Yeah.
It's just a burst. So I was incredibly lucky. But then, as I said, it took a lot of help from... I had two editors. The pre-publishing story is not particularly interesting, but I said, look, let me get the first three books done before we take it anywhere. And meanwhile, let's run it by a good editor, because I've done so much script editing myself. I know that that's where you get the gold. And it's really important to have those eyes on, expert eyes. So I hired a personal editor. Then when we pitched it and sold it to Kazik, who are an excellent publishing house, they assigned me their executive editor, Leslie Robin, who is, by the way, just brilliant. Her notes were incredible. And between us, and then the whole process polishes and polishes and polishes, and anyone who's worked in TV or film will tell you that editing is where you get the gold in script writing, the polishing, the making it better and better. And it's sort of a joke in the, you know, the old joke about studio executives. Do you know that one? How many studio executives does it take to screw in a light bulb?
How many? I'm not sure.
Does it have to be a light bulb? All those meetings where people are sitting around, and that's before you've even written it. You know, everyone's saying, well, what's the show about? Does it have to be this? Does it have to be that?
Yeah.
And when you've got the scripts, then you go over it and you figure out what can be worked, what can't work, what can be improved, what opportunities are coming in, and you polish and polish and polish, which is something that's not necessarily instinctive for a writer. The first feeling that you get when you have your first editing session is that you're being invaded. And how dare they, you know, with my immortal words, why are there these blue lines all over the page? But once you get out of your own way,
yeah.
I mean, I remember my first meeting with a proper, you know, network executive in London, and sitting down and the script, and he opened the page and there was just blue everywhere, and I just felt as if I was being disemboweled by one of those things, that cassowary, you know, those birds that kick you.
Wow.
But I knew enough to keep quiet and take my notes and deliver the second draft, and there were about three notes in the whole script, so he gave me the rest of the series.
Good.
Because it is, you know, it is a communal effort, script writing. And what's fantastic at last to come to writing narrative and to have got it right at last is it's just you and the reader. It's my voice, or the audio book is you and the listener.
Mm.
Whereas when the film is a director's medium, as is TV, the stage is an actor's medium, the opera stage is a singer's medium, a musician's medium, a conductor's medium, a composer's medium, and you're part of the team, which I've always absolutely loved. I've worked with some great people. I mean, as you said, Jack Black and Eric Idle and Placido Domingo, for heaven's sake. I mean, Isabel Allende, the list goes on. And it's great being part of the team, but once you hand over the script, it's the director's room.
Yeah.
And I've directed opera, by the way, where you work with the singers, and at a certain stage, you hand over the room to the conductor. And it's no longer your room. I mean, I wrote the script, and I directed it, and at a certain point, it's his room. And that was Placido Domingo conducting, so I knew I was in very safe hands. But you back off. So a book is just you and the reader, and it's very much more personal. And, of course, you have the narrator's voice. One thing I did learn from Leslie Robin, my editor, is I had this idea that show business was show and narration was tell, that I'm telling a story in a book. But she would say to me, look, don't tell me, show me. Put it in a scene. You have to earn your exposition. Brilliant notes. I'm just brilliant.
Nice.
So you bring everything to life in a scene in front of you, which you're showing and telling at the same time.
Hey, you. Yeah, you. I'm talking to you with the headphones on who are listening to Sci-Fi Thoughts. You've been listening to the show for a while. You must be enjoying it because you keep coming back. Well, hey, help me out. Tell your friends, your family, other people who would like to listen to Sci-Fi Thoughts. Give me a hand. Help me grow the show. So go ahead and right now, just send a text message, write an email, turn around and talk to the person next to you and tell them about Sci-Fi Thoughts. They can find us via Google or they could type in scifithoughts.space. Check out the show notes because we've got some good things in there, like links to Richard Sparks' website and his books and any other interviews that we came across. So you can really get to know the man behind New Rock and New Roll. If you're like my friend Falasha Day and you missed the first episode of the series, which is episode 301, you can find that first episode or any of the interleaving episodes by going to scifithoughts.space and use the search box there to look up whatever episode you care to find. Next episode, more Richard Sparks. You started out with video poker. You're playing video poker in Vegas right, work on your book. And maybe it's broader than that, but how has gaming changed your life for the better? And my kids are listening to this, so be careful how you answer.
Well, I cannot thank it enough for giving me the inspiration to write these books. All my life, I've wanted to write fiction. I mean, I spent 40 years as a scriptwriter making a living. And some years, you don't make anything. Some years, you make plenty of money. And that's the money you use to try and write the stuff you should write. And that's where you get the good work done. And finally, the idea came to me. I mean, nobody else could have written these books. Nobody else could have, you know, the other times I've tried to write books, I look at the back, and I'm glad they're not published, by the way. You look at the back and you think, yeah, anyone could have done that. That's perfectly decent, but why? Because they don't publish books, they publish authors.